Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, June 26th. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the program, we talk birds at Burning with Andy Mason. Andy is the co-president of the Delaware Otsego Audubon Society and co-chair of the group's Franklin Mountain Hawk Watch. To take part in today's discussion, give us a call. The number is 800-348-2551. If you have a bird question, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Andy Mason and your burning questions coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing birds on the show today, and our guest is Andy Mason. He is co-president of the Delaware Otsego Audubon Society and co-chair of the group's Franklin Mountain Hawk Watch. Andy is past chair of the Audubon Council of New York State and past president of the State Ornithological Association. He has been an active birder for more than 30 years, participated in the New York State Breeding Bird Atlas, and has led bird workshops for the Appalachian Mountain Club. The number to call if you have a birding question is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can tweet us at WAMCVoxPop or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Again, that number, however, is 800-348-2551. Andy Mason, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ray. Glad to be here.
You're not the regular guy.
No, he's much better looking than I am.
Rich Guthrie taking a little time off here. Nice to have you on the program. Before we get going with our questions today, tell me about the Franklin Mountain Hawk Watch.
Well, first, let me just say it's an honor to be here to fill in for Rich. He's a great guy.
He is a
great
guy.
Very knowledgeable, and I'm pleased to be able to try and fill his shoes.
I got to say, you don't look too nervous. So this is working out very well so far. So this Franklin Mountain Hawk Watch.
Yeah, we have a hawk migration count in the fall. These are birds headed south. And we start counting in about the third week of August.
Yeah.
And we count through the fall into December. And our hawk watch typically counts about 5,000 raptors, hawks and eagles, over the course of the season, 16 different species typically, and the numbers are decent, but compared to weather hawk watches, relatively modest. But our big claim to fame is that we get a lot of golden eagles migrating. They pass through starting mid October through November and into December, and we typically get a couple of hundred or more. Last year we had a record year, and it was actually the highest count in eastern North America.
Now, I've asked Rich this question before, and I never quite figure out the answer. How do you tell that you aren't counting the same bird twice?
Well, actually, we may. There are some species that's a bit of a challenge. Turkey vultures, for example. Turkey vultures will go by, and then maybe an hour later we'll see some drift back the other way. So we do have a protocol. We only count on days when there's distinct movement in the migration direction. We only count if the birds are above the horizon. If they're down in the valley from our vantage point, we don't count them. Bald eagles are another species that's increasingly being problematic that way because there are a lot of local bald eagles around now, and so we only count the migrants. So separating the local bald eagles from the migrants can be a challenge.
Mm, and you mentioned golden eagles. There are plenty of them when you do the Franklin Mountain Hawk Watch. Why are there so many nowadays?
Well, their population is relatively small in eastern North America. The estimate is maybe 5,000 pairs. But they nest way, way up in northern Quebec and Labrador, as far from here as it is from here to Miami.
Yeah.
So by the time they get here, they've already traveled a long way. And why we get as many as we do, we don't quite know. They definitely follow ridges. They get updraft from the ridges, and our site is on a ridge. And we see them coming down, and then a number of them have been fitted with satellite transmitters to give GPS locations.
Isn't that cheating when you do a watch?
Well, Yeah, it's a little bit cheating, but
that's all right.
It's a little invasive for them, I guess. But we learned a lot from that. We learned where they do nest, and then they head down through the Appalachians and they winter some winter in New York, and then down through the Appalachians to Georgia.
So we're joined today by Andy Mason. We talk birds on the program. It's 800-348-2551. Before we jump on the phones, you had made in passing a reference to the calendar of the birds before we started the show. I didn't know the birds had a calendar. Explain.
Well, I guess it's an internal calendar. I don't think they have one on their phones.
On their wall and the nest.
But, you know, it's always interesting to me to watch the kind of the activities of birds, especially through breeding season. We're right in the heart of the breeding season right now, particularly for the small songbirds, the migrant birds that come up here from the tropics. So right now, if you're out in the woods or along a country road or even in your backyard, very, very common to see birds carrying food. And that's not food for themselves. That's food they're taking to their nestlings or possibly to young birds that have fledged and they're continuing to feed them. So that's where we are in the bird calendar right now. There are still birds laying eggs, probably still birds incubating, but the real activity is feeding the young right now. And that'll continue through into probably for another 3-4 weeks. And then the younger birds will be on their own.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's Birds Today. Andy Mason, our guest, and we jump on the phones. Jim Hansen in LaGrange, you're on.
Yeah, hi. My neighbor across the street has a bunch of barn swallows, and he tells me that those barn swallows gobble up every single mosquito that you can have ever imagined. And I want to know how I can get barn swallows without necessarily maybe having them invade my barn like they do in his barn. His barn's pretty much a mess of the on the bottom with a lot of bird droppings.
Yeah.
Is there a chance to do both? Can I get barn swallows that'll gobble up every mosquito within 100 miles and at the same time not have it destroy my barn?
Well, yeah, someone said that a swallow can eat 1,000 mosquitoes in a day. I don't know how they counted that, but that's pretty impressive if it's true. Well, they need shelter, overhead shelter. So if you were to build a shed, you know, with no floor in it, where you didn't care if the droppings ended up, with some ledges for them to attach their nests to, they very well may move in there. You know, it wouldn't have to be anything elaborate, probably. Maybe would need to be 6 or 8 feet high because they won't nest close to the ground because of predators. But you could, you know, if you're willing to go to that much trouble to put up a structure for them, I think quite possibly you could get them, especially if they're in the neighborhood, because they may be limited by nest sites. So if your neighbor has them, maybe the overflow would end up with you.
Jim, thanks for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Birds Today with Andy Mason. George Ann is in Woodstock. George Ann, you're on.
Hi. Actually, I'm in West Hurley near Woodstock. We just moved here, and we have orioles in our yard, and I've never seen them around here, and I was wondering if there's something going on or if we're just really lucky to have these beautiful birds in our yard.
No, they're a common breeding bird here. They're here every year. They are tropical migrants. They go way south to the Caribbean, Central America. But this year seems, for whatever reason, to have been a very good year for orioles. There were people reporting to me that they had 6 or 8 coming to their house. You can put out food for them, especially when they first return in May. People cut oranges in half. That's that attracts them. Some people put out grape jelly.
Huh.
There are special bird feeders, like oversized hummingbird feeders that you put sugar water in that will attract orioles. I never had much success myself. I don't know why. I do it all, you know, everything it's supposed to do, and I rarely get orioles. But my neighbors and other people do get them, and they're a beautiful, beautiful bird, absolutely.
Well, thank you very much. You know where you usually find the orioles, don't you?
Baltimore?
Last place. That's right. Let's go to Cindy in Scotia. Cindy, you're on.
Thank you. Two questions for you. One is about hummingbirds. Annually, we put out our feeders at the end of April to start attracting them as they're migrating to our area, and we usually get 2 to 4 in our our yard. But the last two seasons, they've disappeared for a while, and this has now happened again. And I'm keeping the feeder going and cleaning it and doing all I should. Last year they did return. I don't know exactly when. I didn't pay as much attention as I should have, but wondered what could be happening. This is the second season this happened, and generally it has not.
Yeah, well, as I mentioned earlier, the birds right now are in the process of feeding their young, and hummingbirds actually feed their young insects. They do catch insects on the wing, and the young birds need protein, and of course, sugar water doesn't supply that. So there is a period when they're really focused on feeding the young, raising the young, that they're going to visit your feeder less.
Huh.
But they may well come back and probably bring the youngsters with them. That's not at all uncommon to see a little later in the summer, see the adults back. So I wouldn't be too worried. I'd give them a little bit longer, and I suspect you'll see them again.
Very good. The other question is for my husband. He wondered what of the bird calls sounds like a squeaking fence or squeaking gate. He thinks it's a blue jay. Do they make that kind of squeaking sound?
Blue jays are actually good mimics, so they could be mimicking a sound. My guess would be that it's a catbird. Catbirds have very squeaky sound. It's in your garden near your house?
It is near the house, and it just does sound like somebody's opening an old gate.
Can you imitate it, Cindy?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask
me. Come on. No, can't do it, huh?
I'm not good at imitating it. Rats. You know, just
There you go.
So
excellent.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Yeah, that catbirds are related to mockingbirds, and mockingbirds are fantastic mimics. You know, they're spot on with their imitations. Catbirds try it, but they don't do as well. And what comes out is basically a bunch of squeaky, non-melodic sounds.
No offense to Cindy.
Okay. No, not at all. That was beautiful.
Well, thank you, Cindy. Yeah. We have to take a break here, but thank you for the call. Our guest today is Andy Mason. The number is 800-348-2551. I'm going to ask you why birds imitate other birds when we come back from the break. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. It's 800-348-2551 if you want to call in. Our guest today is Andy Mason, and we talk birds today. So getting back to the question I posed before the break, why is it that some birds imitate other birds?
Well, it's an evolution that they have developed. I think with blue jays that I mentioned before sometimes imitate other birds, they very often will imitate hawks, and when they come in like to a bird feeder, they'll let out a scream like a red-tailed hawk, and it just clears all the other birds out.
So they get right to the food or water.
I've seen that many times. Now with mockingbirds, their repertoire is amazing, and there have been studies done with mockingbirds and thrashers, a similar bird. Similar species, that the females are attracted to the males who have the greatest repertoire of sounds.
Mm.
So why they started it in the first place, I don't know, but definitely it's a way for those species to attract and impress and attract females.
Very interesting. All right, an email here, Andy, and then we'll get back to the phones. This one is from Jim. Subject heading, Yankee Stadium Red Tail. Any idea why a red-tailed hawk would be hanging out at Yankee Stadium the last couple of games? It seems very calm and has been on many of the flagpoles as well as the field, the right field foul pole. So that's interesting.
Yeah, well, maybe they're playing the Blue Jays.
Oh, yeah, or the Orioles.
There's food around stadiums. I'm sure Yankee Stadium has its share of rats in the neighborhood. There are definitely pigeons. Central Park red-tailed hawks that are kind of famous, their main prey is pigeons.
Yeah.
And it makes a pretty good meal. So I would think in any urban setting where there's a red-tailed hawk, it's food-related. They probably have a good view from those flagpoles.
They have good eyesight.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Superb eyesight, and I don't know if they dare to dive down in the middle of a game, but also gulls. You know, gulls are around stadiums for scavenging.
Did you see the video that was on social media a couple of weeks ago? Somebody had gone up to Nubble Lighthouse up in Maine and was showing off the lobster roll that she had. And as she's taking the selfie with the lobster roll, you see in the frame a gull coming in and going for the lobster roll.
Wow.
Oh, it was a beautiful thing. All right, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Tony in North Adams. Tony, you're on.
Yes. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hello.
I have a question. And Ray, thank you for everything you do. I'm a lifetime member.
Thank you.
And Adam, I have a question for you. What are these so-called turkey buzzards? Could you explain that?
Well, the official name is turkey vulture. A lot of people call them buzzards. That's a vernacular name.
So buzzard is the same thing as a vulture?
Yeah, yeah. That's
okay.
Sort of a slang term.
All right.
But they are scavengers, and, you know, when you see them circling overhead in groups, what they're doing is looking for carrion, looking for something dead.
I see.
And they, you know, they're very good at finding it. They're one of the few birds that has much of a sense of smell. It's good that they do that because they're kind of nature's cleanup agents in a lot of ways. So they're going to take care of the roadkill and clean up that sort of stuff.
So when they circle, there's something dead nearby.
Yeah, if they're over one spot, they've probably got their eye on something. So don't lie down and take a nap in your yard.
All right, Tony.
Okay.
All right, thanks, man.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. I love vultures. I love watching them in the sky.
Fantastic flyers. Yeah.
Yep. And let's see here. Who's been waiting the longest? Oh, looks like Jeff. Jeff in Schenectady, you're on.
Okay, thank you for taking the call. I'd just like to I have a comment about orioles, but I wanted to say about vultures. It's not that they have their eye on anything, per se, as much as the smell.
Yeah.
And I literally saw a vulture come down from nearly 1,000 feet circling down and landed on the lawn outside my house where I'd mowed recently, and turns out I killed a snake. And that guy smelled it from that far up and came down and got it. I have a picture of him eating it.
How can that be?
It was really cool.
How can that be if you're 1,000 feet up? Do we have telescope? I can see telescopic vision, but telescopic sense of smell has to be very difficult.
No, they've done experiments where they've buried carcasses, buried carrion, and the vultures still find it.
Amazing. Come down. Yeah. All right, Jeff, what about the orioles do you need to know?
I have orioles usually. I see them. I had more this year than ever, like you said before. But what happened was they arrived before the fruit cheese really were in bloom, and for the first time I'd ever seen, you were talking about trying to feed them. I wasn't really trying to. I have suet up for other birds right outside my kitchen window, and we had orioles eating there for a week and a half, almost 2 weeks. Never seen that. Could you comment on that? They're nectar eaters.
Yeah. Well, you know, any port in a storm. I think if a bird's hungry, it's going to look for alternative sources. And I've also heard of orioles feeding at suet. You know, it's probably not a bad meal for them. You know, they certainly will take fruit and insects. And, you know, they're in the blackbird family, and the blackbirds are kind of omnivores. They'll take advantage of whatever they can find. So I would think it was probably forced on them a bit by maybe lack of other sources.
All right, Jeff, thank you very much for the call. We go now to Teresa in Massachusetts. Hello, Teresa.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are
you? I'm hoping you can answer my question. I'm good, thank you. So we're big bird fans. I live in Vermont. By the way, Baltimore Orioles have arrived in Vermont about 3 years ago and are increasing. The birds are changing. But the bird I'm calling about is ubiquitous to the Northeast. I hear it in the woods all the time. I cannot identify it.
Oh, I love this. All right.
It's been headlining me for years. You want me to try?
Oh, yeah, I do. Go ahead.
It's got this descending whistle. We call it a flute bird. It goes... I don't know if you can pick that up, but it has a much more melodic note. But it sounds like it's on a flute. It's a descending note, usually in two, then down a little two, and then down a little two. Somebody told me it might be a vireo.
No, but they were close. It's a veery, which is V-E-E-R-Y, veery, and it's named for its call.
Okay.
It's sort of a doodle-loodle-loodle-loodle-loodle-loodle. It kind of does go down the scale.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's in the thrush family. All the thrushes are super singers, and they all have this flute-like quality to their voice. Wood thrushes, hermit thrushes, Swainson's thrushes.
Doodle-loodle-loodle. It's like Mel Torme.
A little bit. So.
You've heard it a million times. I'm telling you, if you live anywhere in the Northeast, you've heard it a million times.
Yeah. You might have misheard them. You know,
in the background.
When they said it was a vireo, you might have misheard them, but it's a veery. And, it's
veery.
A wonderful sound, especially in the mountains. They like the mountains, and, it's a real wilderness sound to me. Yeah.
Well, Teresa, thanks for the call. Drive safely. The number is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. We go now to Kathy in Hopewell Junction. Hello, Kathy.
Hello. I want to reinforce the oriole thing. I've been trying to attract orioles to my feeders for years. Never had any success. And this year they've been at the sewer. So I guess that's the theme this year.
Huh. Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
Maybe I'll have to try that. I usually bring the suet in once it starts getting warm.
You're not going
to
try eating the suet,
rancid.
Right?
Well, no, it's not.
Yeah.
I understand. Okay.
But
I feed it all year. But my question is this. I feed the catbirds grape jelly, which they love.
Mm-hmm.
And we have bluebirds in our houses. And we had one brood fledge this year. The second brood failed. It looked like the female disappeared. But I can attract the bluebirds with mealworms.
Yes.
However, both birds, and I have checked on Cornell's site to see if they are known to eat seeds at all, bluebirds and catbirds, both of them have been eating sunflower seeds.
Wow. Well, I have heard catbirds taking sunflower seeds, but not really bluebirds. That's a little surprising.
Why?
It's just not a food that they typically eat. They're insect eaters. They're fruit eaters, and their bill really is not adapted to opening sunflower seeds.
Well, they are sunflower chips, so they're shelled.
Oh, so they're shelled already. I see.
Yeah, and that's all we're feeding in that feeder. So that's what they were eating.
Wow. Wow. Well, that's good.
I just thought that was crazy. So.
Well, it's nutritious food. You know, it's got a lot of high oil content, and so it's probably good for them. It may just be that bluebirds typically don't discover sunflower seeds. You know, they don't usually come to feeders, but maybe your pair, hit upon it and they've taken advantage. That's good.
Kathy, thanks for the call. Now, this is the second time we've had a reference to putting grape jelly out for birds. Why jelly, and why just grape jelly? What is the deal with that?
Well, I think the sweetness attracts the orioles. Orioles seem to like sweet things. They, as I said, they go for oranges. They'll pick the centers out of apple blossoms, which have a little sweetness to them.
But strawberry, too, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be grape,
I think it's grape,
is my point.
Grape is the cheapest, has always been my take on it.
Gotcha.
But, they'd probably go for raspberry or boysenberry, you know.
Some pudding or something, put it out there, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be a good experiment.
That's very interesting. Andy Mason is our guest today. We talk birds on the show. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Let's go to Anne in Queensbury. Anne, you're on.
Hi. We have a problem with a bird that likes to sit on the arms of our retractable awning that goes over our deck. So every morning when I wake up and look out on the deck, there are bird droppings there. How can I prevent them from hanging out there?
Well, probably if something is attracting it, maybe, insects under the awning or on the siding. You don't have a feeder out or anything that would attract them?
No, and we back up to woods.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have a feeder out.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Well, the birds that perch out in the open like that typically are in the flycatcher family, phoebes or that type of bird. So my guess is it's perching there looking for insects. And as far as keeping it off, I would say maybe if you could hang some foil strips or something that might annoy them in the location where the bird typically sits. that might keep it away. That's the downside to having birds around your house is the droppings.
The fake owls really don't work, right?
No, you'll find the thing will sit on the owl's head after a while. You know?
Okay.
So that's about all I could suggest is, some sort of a deterrent. Another thing that people hang up sometimes are old CDs, the old shiny CDs.
Yeah, like Ted Nugent or something terrible,
something
right?
We don't listen to anymore.
Yeah, there you go.
And that might keep it away.
And thanks for the call. Good luck. We appreciate it. I guess you could put the awning up, right, at night?
Well, that would be a solution.
Only put it out when you're going to use it, and the bird probably won't come near.
That's too obvious. Yeah.
Our number here is 800-348-2551, and D. Mason is our guest. Steve in Massachusetts. Steve, you're on. Oh, Steve, you have waited all that time, and now you're gone, and now you'll never get back on the show. And Joe, who got dropped, apparently. Joe, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Earlton, New York.
All right. Well, you're on.
Okay, thank you. So I have a question about hummingbirds. Something I noticed, I'm assuming it's some sort of a courtship ritual thing. I'm familiar with the one where the female sits on a branch and then the male does a big pendulum art back and forth, and I've seen that many, many times. But this is different. I have one of my feeders, hummingbird feeders, hanging from a clothesline. So a female was sitting on near to that, and a couple feet away, what I didn't even know it was a male until I saw it flash its ruby throat. I couldn't see it. He had it like closed, like almost like Venetian blinds, like the the warships used to signal each other with the flashing lights on their spotlights with this. Yeah. And that's what he was doing. Yes, that thing. Yeah. And it looked like that's what he was doing to the female. He'd open it and close it, and open it and close it to flash this red. Are you familiar with that?
Well, that sort of a display is typical with birds. You may have been seeing, that bright glow only shows up when the light hits them in the right direction. So, bird may have been turning, but also they can spread those feathers to display, and it's a lot of birds do that sort of display. Grouse do a big display, and certainly turkeys. I'm sure you've seen turkeys in a field fluffing themselves.
Yeah,
up.
I've seen red-winged blackbirds. I've seen them do it to the epaulettes. They kind of flash those things.
Those colors, that's the purpose of those bright colors on the males, is to impress the females. And so,
they
do it to the best extent possible.
All right, Joe, thanks for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop Birds Today with Andy Mason. Bob is in Valencia. Bob.
Hi. Hi. Bob Clark in Valencia. I was slightly unhappy when I heard you talk about catbirds as not being as good as mockingbirds at imitating sounds. Anyway, that's kind of a silly reaction.
You're always going for the underdog, huh?
Well, I'm afraid so, because I love catbirds. I don't know that much about birds, but catbirds are one of those creatures, like chickadees, with which you can really intersect as a human being. You have chickadee who will, if you stand at the bird feeder, they'll actually come and eat seeds out of your, land on your hand and eat seeds.
Yeah.
Catbirds, in my experience here, will often, I think, talk to me. I mean, I come out in the morning and there's a catbird sitting on the railing of my deck, and if I make funny noises, I swear this catbird is answering me. And I've had experiences with catbirds following me around the property as I'm digging around the garden here and there and everywhere, and the catbird will follow me close. I mean, really less than 10 feet away. I don't know if you've had this experience with catbirds, but they seem so social.
Yeah.
And I guess I wonder, what is it about creatures like catbirds and chickadees, for example, that will enable them to intersect with us closely? It's one of the joys in enjoying wildlife.
Yeah, yeah. Well, birds definitely have
any clues on that?
They have different, birds have different personalities. Some are very, very spooky. It's very hard to get a look at them or approach them. And others, and I have had similar experiences with catbirds. In fact, just today I was clearing some brush in my yard, and it was a catbird, 5 or 6 feet away. I think it was not too happy with me, actually. But yeah, they are a species that seems to tolerate, and I don't know as I would say appreciate humans, but they certainly don't shy away. And yes, as far as talking to them, it is possible to imitate bird songs and have them reply. You know, I don't know what they're saying or if you get any great insights.
What they're saying,
from it,
but, sure, of course.
Now, when the birds start imitating you, Bob, that's going to be a problem.
Well, that's mockingbirds.
Right. Well, I'll wait for that.
Yeah. Anyway, we got to go here and take a break. Well, thank you for the call. Andy Mason is our guest. It's birds today on the program, and what fun we're having. So many calls to go. Hang in there. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. It's 800-348-2551. If you have a burning, birding question, 800-348-2551. Andy Mason, our guest today, and two emails here, Andy, and then we'll go back to the phones for the home stretch. This is a question from Mike in Kingston. How can I attract catbirds, add mockingbirds to my backyard? Well, the answer is, of course, invite our last caller up, or he'll talk to them.
Yeah, you can just.
Now, how do you do that?
Well, they're not. Neither of them are common feeder birds, but they will. You know, as a previous caller mentioned, they will come in for jelly. But their main food is fruit. So I'd say, you know, in the longer term, if you planted fruit bearing bushes, viburnums are good. You know. Raspberries, blackberries, sumac, those will be fed on by crab apples. Will be fed on by those birds,
okay.
And you know you take a little time for them to get established into fruit. But that's they're frugivores is the term there.
Well, fair enough. This one is from Richard, and the subject heading: red-winged blackbird. How does the male red-winged blackbird get its red? Is it true that the male does not get the red on its wings until it has mated with a female? There's no red doodle till the blackbird's canoodle.
Well, that's
thank you for that one, Richard. And I wish I had pre-read it. Frankly, I would.
Yeah, that's a new one to me.
No red doodle till the blackbird's canoodle. Check, please, and well, now I'm finished.
Yeah, that's a new one. I don't know. I don't think that's true, but
okay.
It's a nice myth.
You know, I gotta read these in advance. So we have this intern, and she's a fabulous intern, like really smart and great. She's obviously figured out that I'm not too bright because she wrote phonetically Poughkeepsie. So let's go to Eileen in Poughkeepsie. You're on.
Well, you've led a sheltered life, Ray. Andy, I am trying to attract hummingbirds, and I can't find my bird food, which was a powder that I would mix up. And today I decided, well, I would try the emergency powder that I had, and I'm hoping that won't harm little hummingbirds.
Well, the powder that you're referring to is basically sugar with a little food coloring in.
Yes.
You know, I would say don't waste your money on the powder. Just buy plain sugar.
Well, I finished the rest off myself, but I thought I didn't want to deter them from coming as they do. I've got a simple little feeder hanging near a bright hanging pot of flowers.
Yeah.
Colorful flowers.
Yeah. Well, the red color is a plus. You know, that does attract them in the first place. But once they're established at your feeder, they're quite happy with just plain sugar water. You know, three parts
of
water.
Well, that's what I have normally put in. But I thought, well, I had this out, and I would give it a try. There's a bee guard on the
right.
Vial. And I'm just hoping they'll keep coming. Maybe I'll try jelly.
Why not grape jelly? Everybody's doing it.
Give it a try. I don't know if it'll work for hummingbirds. It's you know, they're more
well, I'll
liquid,
dilute it.
Yeah, give that a try. Again, another good experiment.
Eileen, thank you very much for the call from Poughkeepsie. And now let's go to Greg, who's on the road. Greg, you're not in Poughkeepsie, are you?
Nope, I'm in Cobleskill right now. Hey, I just wanted to mention, I saw down near, what was it, Voorheesville, on my way home from work, I saw a black vulture. And the only reason I know is because it looked like a turkey vulture, only its head was completely feathered with these tiny little gray feathers. So I went home and I looked it up. And according to the map in the bird book, they're not supposed to be up here. And so I was wondering if they are moving farther north because it's getting warmer.
Yeah, you hit it on the head. They definitely are expanding their range. At our Hawk Watch, we've been in operation for over 30 years, and we 2 years ago got our first black vulture, and we've had them now for the last 2 years. So they're up here in Albany. They're actually overwintering. They're spending the winter. They're pretty hardy birds.
Yeah, and they're pretty fearless. I've seen them sitting on sidewalks in Del Mar, cars rushing by, and they're just hanging out, man. They don't really care.
Yeah, they're abundant in the
same area too.
Yeah, they tend to congregate in certain spots and roost in the same spot at night, as do turkey vultures. Yeah.
I have one other thing. I want to mention it just because it's one of those things about people are like, oh, bird brains, you know, well, and not being too smart. Well, one of the things I've done research on crows, Corbidae, and those things are incredible. And one of the things that they've most recently discovered is crows play, like they'll take like a mayonnaise jar lid, go up to the peak of a roof and slide down the roof on it. There are crows in Siberia that will hop up a hill, turn perpendicular to the lie of the hill, and then roll down the hill. They work with animals. They work with wolves. They make and use tools, and they have a memory insofar as there was a young researcher that was doing some grad work and captured crows. And from that point on, any crow on the campus, because they communicate, that's the other thing, they talk and they share information. The crows in the area would dive bomb this one student.
Oh, well, I'll be darned.
And so, what they did is that student graduated, and a couple years later, he came back to see his professor, and wouldn't you know it, the damn thing went after him again.
The darn things, good.
So, I'm sorry.
That's
fine. I'm sorry.
It's public radio.
God, that's terrible. Anyways.
What the heck?
What they did is they had the technology at the college at that point to make those latex masks.
Right. Yeah.
So they made one that looked like a student.
Yeah.
And the teacher went out with the face mask on and they dive bombed him.
Wow.
And one of the things that they've discovered is that the whole concept of the volume of the brain to the volume of the body is no longer useful. It's really not.
Okay.
Because it's the neuron density of the brain.
Ah.
So there's more neurons in the same space.
That's my
problem. So I'm thinking there are a lot more animals like fish and birds and stuff like that that have the same thing. Because I know from experience, I know this is a bird show, but I have I did it again.
Yes, that's it. And I use the delay. So, hey, you're done there, buddy boy. But hey, you had a good
run.
Some
good points. Yeah,
very good points.
Crows are incredible.
Don't worry, Zach. I hit the dump button. Everything fine. All right, he didn't mean much, and frankly, we'd get away with it anyway, but better safe than sorry here on this very urbane program. Let's go to Ellen in Ballston Lake. Ellen, you're on.
Oh, good afternoon.
Hello, don't swear, okay?
How are you, Andy? And I listen to you all the time, Ray. You're wonderful.
Thank you.
Alan Zartok and everybody.
All right, anyway. Now no swearing. Okay, good.
I don't swear, but... Okay, so first of all, I live in the Boston Lake area, which is in the Hudson Reservation area, you know, the preservation for birds. And I remember a few years ago, Ray Graff had Granger on, and he talked about how they were introducing red-tailed hawks. And I just want to let you know that there's at least three mating couples
in the Boston Lake area.
Huh.
And I see them all the time.
Cool.
They're wonderful. They're just, they clear out my chickadees. And I mean, you can actually know when they're around because there's a high intensity of chatter. And then it's really quiet.
Yeah. Well, that's good. They're great birds to have around. They eat a lot of mice. That's their main prey.
Yeah.
So they keep the rodent population down.
Yeah,
absolutely. You're fortunate.
Ellen, thanks so much for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. We have a strict no swearing rule in this program. Just remind you of that. It's Mason. Let's go to Paul in Saratoga. Paul, you're on.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
I'm calling from the town of Saratoga, so it's a very rural, woodsy, dairy farm location.
Okay.
And I'm a longtime bird feeder and watcher. And this year I've really observed a significant change in behavior with my hairy, downy, and red-bellied woodpecker customers.
Ah.
Usually they're big suet eaters, and they still continue to eat suet, but they have transformed from being semi-occasional feeder visitors to 100% there all day and evening, and they're eating the bird seed.
Wow.
And I think that kind of correlates to an observation I'm noticing here is that we've had a massive disappearance in the insect population. In fact, I don't see honeybees, butterflies, moths, crickets. It's totally silent at night. I'm kind of wondering, are the woodpeckers, you know, shifting their diet because there are no insects? I mean, you know, you read about the insect apocalypse. I actually think it's, you know, we're at ground zero here, mostly probably driven by pesticide use. What do you think about that? And it's something I don't really hear too much from the bird community, from Audubon or Cornell.
All right, let's let Andy Mason give us a go here.
I have also heard people sort of complain about the lack of insects this summer. I haven't noticed it myself, but that could be a factor. Now, woodpeckers typically, though, don't feed on flying insects so much. They feed on larvae under the bark of trees. They may well pick caterpillars off the trees, but they're not going to be out there fly catching. But that's not to say those insects also could be in decline.
Yeah.
And birds need protein, and sunflower seeds do provide some protein. So if they're not getting it from insects, they may well switch to seeds.
Thank you very much for the call. We go now to Andy in Schenectady. Andy, you're on.
How we doing?
Pretty good.
All right. Two things. I'm in Schenectady, I'm near St. Clair's Hospital, the old hospital.
Yeah.
We got a pair of red tails there. And I was working on a job site in Menands, and I heard this bird. It sounded like a whistling bottle rocket.
Hmm.
No.
Sure,
now,
it wasn't a real bottle rocket?
Located. It wasn't. It was broad daylight.
All right.
No boom. There was no boom. Let's put it that way.
Okay, no report at the end. Okay.
Right.
So what do you think, Andy?
Gee. I think that one might stump me. I'm trying to think. A bottle rocket is sort of like a screaming, tapering off.
Yeah, it's screaming.
Thing. Yeah.
Gee. Yeah, and it tapers away. And this, but this one you can hear. Right, exactly. You can hear this coming down, though. You know, you can hear it real loud as a bird's diving.
Well,
I know there are
red-tailed hawks have a sort of a scream like "Kier, Kier."
Yeah,
when you see a bald eagle screaming, it's the red-tailed hawk call they'll dub in there. You know, bald eagles actually do not have a very dramatic call, so they'll put in a screaming. Possibly it's the red tails. You know.
No, it's because I drove by and I saw a little blackbird. I don't know if it's a blackbird, but he was on a telephone wire.
Could it be?
And as I drove by,
Andy in Schenectady. Andy, our guest, had mentioned that there is a bird that'll imitate hawks to clear the room when it wants to eat. Could it be one of those?
Right. Blue jays will do that. And another bird that will make that sort of a sound, a poor imitation of a hawk, is a starling. And I'm sure there's plenty of starlings in Schenectady, you know, so they
well,
do.
Well, this is actually in the Nans where I was hearing it. But, yeah, I think
yeah, well,
right.
any of the urban areas.
Starlings are black, right?
Yeah, they are. So I'm glad you mentioned the blackbird thing because that prompted me
so
to
So it could
think
be an imitation.
Yeah, it could be an imitation. Again, starlings are mimics, not as good as mockingbirds, but they do have that sort of description that you made of the bottle rockets is one sound that starlings make. So and there's lots of starlings, so you could probably go out and watch them for a bit, and maybe you'll hear that or see them make that call.
All right, let's go to Nancy in Wilton. Hello, Nancy.
Boy, you guys got my head going with all these things you're talking about. Very interesting program.
Thank you.
I'll stick to my subject, and that is 40 years ago, one of my English Springer Spaniel, a fowl hunting animal, brought in a fledgling Baltimore Oriole, broke its wing, broke its leg, and back then there was nobody to call to, you know, come rescue this bird. So I mended its wing the best I could. I mended its leg successfully, but the wing was never quite right. So he became ours. And he would sit out in this big wire cage that I had out on this open, and we were way out in the farmland, and he would sing everything you could imagine, you know, like a catbird does or like a thrasher. And I thought, well, isn't that interesting? And I didn't know much about Baltimore Orioles. And then one day, about 2 years later, a whole host of Baltimore Oriole males ascended on his cage, and they started singing to him. And I recorded it. I just got so crazed. I recorded it. I got it on my little cassette disc somewhere, my cassette tape.
Yeah.
And when they started singing, all of a sudden, it was like he went, oh, yeah, that's who I am. And he belted it out. I'm not kidding. He belted it out like you wouldn't believe. And then from that point on, that's the only song he would sing.
Wow.
For 2 years, he'd been trying to sing everybody else's tune. And then when he heard his own,
you know
and they're all hanging around, what are you doing in that cage?
You should turn that into a children's book.
That's a parable for, you know, don't follow the crowd, little Oriole. Sing your own song.
But research into how birds do learn the song. They learn it from their father to some degree, but even more so from other males of the same species. So that, you know, that would sort of correlate with what you experienced.
Well, Andy Mason, you did extremely well today. We're at the end of the show. See how fast it came?
Yeah,
it wasn't that you thought it was going to be terrible. It was only marginally terrible. This was all right.
It was fantastic.
Thanks to everybody who called in today. Support comes from Patricia Dalton Fennell, producer working to bridge the arts, science, and service, announcing jazz, announcing what? Announcing Jazz Colleagues events in the Capital Region, the Hudson Valley, and throughout the listening area. PatriciaDaltonJazz.com. And the Nature Conservancy's Adirondack chapter, working to protect ecologically important lands and waters of the Adirondacks for nature and people. nature.org/Adirondacks. Thanks again to Andy Mason. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. Phones are answered by intern Jackie Orchard, who taught me how to say Poughkeepsie today. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis, and I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, oh my heavens, this is fantastic. The gardeners return tomorrow. So if you got a question about the garden, that would be the show. Stand by now for 51%.